Day about Rav Amital and Sarah, and Sarah was compared to a simple calf, and the importance, even though you're striving in life for sophistication, the importance to maintain your simplicity and not to let sophistication somehow create too much artifice. So, because Rabbi Sacks was Nifter on Sunday, so I thought one of the ways to honor his memory is for me to read to you two portraits of simplicity from his book called The Great Partnership. So I'm just going to read these two stories, but very often stories are more morally instructive because they're not abstract ideas that you then have to translate into your life. They're actual people's lives, and you can learn from their lives. Oh, that makes sense. It's much more vivid and illustrative. So let's just read two or three pages. I'll go fast. They're very interesting stories. Max Ostro was a young Jew living in Poland when the Nazis came. He and his family were rounded up. Together with one of his brothers and his father, he was herded into a cattle truck in a train bound for Treblinka. No one came back from Treblinka. It was an extermination camp. There, many of Poland's 3 million Jews were gassed, burned, and turned into ash. In the train, barely able to breathe, his father held his two sons. He told them, "My kinder, my children, if you stay on the train, you will die. It belongs to the Malach HaMavis, the angel of death. I want you to daven Maariv, pray. Then I want the two of you to jump. The Nazis will shoot, but one of you will survive. This I promise you, one of you will survive." The sons davened. Both jumped from the train. The Nazis saw the movement, started firing. Max's brother was killed instantly. Max, under the cover of darkness, survived. The family had hidden a sum of money, which Max was able to recover, and with it he paid a farmer to hide him in his barn. Max survived this way for some time. Then came November 1944. The Nazi effort to round up and exterminate all remaining Jews intensified. Max later told his son, Max is a survivor, told his son that he had a dream at the time. In it he saw the Rebbe, the holy teacher his father had admired. The Rebbe told him, "It's no longer safe for you in the barn." So Max came to an arrangement with the farmer. He had himself buried in a grave in the ground, with only a narrow space open to the sky. Through the space, Max was able to breathe. Once a week, the farmer would come and bring something for Max to eat and drink. He survived like that, buried alive for 2 months, until the war came to an end. Max eventually came to Britain, built a business, married, and had 2 children. He went to shul regularly, prayed every day, lived his life as an Orthodox Jew, gave much of his money to charity, never spoke bitterly about the Holocaust, and though he sometimes wept for the family he had lost, he and the other survivors in Britain became an extended family to one another. I did not know Max well, but I visited him in the hospital, and I heard his story. I'm sorry, when he died, he went to Rabbi Menachem Avil, Max's son Maurice, and Maurice told Rabbi Sacks his story. Second story. Louis S. was not a Holocaust survivor. His family left Poland long before, after pogroms and a wave of anti-Semitic incidents. He came to Britain when he was 6. The family were poor. Louis had to leave school at the age of 14 and work to help support his parents and siblings. Eventually, he opened a shop selling shmatas to local tailors. It was not a successful business. Days would pass without a customer. Louis would listen to the radio. He would read. Eventually, he married and had children. Louis went to the shul every day. He did not understand much Hebrew, but this he knew. He was a Jew. He believed in God, and his fate was in God's hands. That was enough for him. Louis walked tall. Towards the end of his life, in his 80s, he had to undergo 5 major operations. Each sapped his strength, and he grew progressively weaker. In his hospital, he had his talis and tefillin. He would put them on as best he could in daven. Other times, he would read from a little Hebrew copy of Tehillim. God was watching over him, and Louis trusted God. He knew his days on earth were nearing their end, and God was about to take him to himself. He died peacefully, one of his sons holding his hand. He told me later that he had been saying the morning prayers and had just reached the passage, Neshama shenasata bitarahi. Louis died. Louis was my father. It was Sachs's father. I tell these stories because Max and Louis were ordinary people. Max, who through no choice of his own, had acquired greatness thrust upon him by surviving the darkest night in history. And Louis, who remained ordinary, yet whose life had a dignity and thankfulness to which I, his son, could barely aspire. They believed in God and they lived their lives in his presence. That fact gave their lives meaning. They were here through God's love. They lived on God's earth. They breathed God's breath. What they had, they owed to God, and therefore, whether they could do, they shared with others. They came to God's house and thanked him for their lives, their families, and the freedom to thank him. Their lives had a kind of radiance and gravitas, a belongingness. Neither Max nor my father suffered existential angst. They live each day as God's blessing and saw no need to philosophize beyond that point. When asked, how are you, they would reply, Baruch Hashem. They did good to others unostentatiously, because that is what you do. That is why we are here. They did not trouble heaven with their bootless cries, desiring this man's art and that man's scope, with what they most enjoyed contented least. What they had, they gave thanks for. What they lacked did not trouble them. God knew what was best, and they trusted him. They accepted fate. They made a blessing over life. Their faith, this is the conclusion, did not rest on the principled belief that God created the world in 6 days, or that the ontological argument was true. They didn't read Kierkegaard and made a reason-defying leap into commitment. In fact, if you wanted to discuss any of these things with them, philosophy, they'd probably have poured you a whiskey and said, Zagalachai. They were religious because that was the commitment their ancestors had made and stayed true to for more than 100 generations. Because that is how a Jew lives, and because people who live that way are somehow more real, more honest than those who pursue their idols of fame or wealth or success, which always have the habit of coming back and biting you. No, their life seems to say God exists, the universe exists, we exist. What more do you want? There is a simplicity in that faith that I respect. So, beautiful words for a very, very special person. And very much in line with what we talked about. I think the secret is to try. No one can say Rabbi Sacks was a simple person. I don't think anyone would use that word to define him. But I think everyone would say that he has simplicity at his core, that he inherited from his father and people like Max. And that's something, that's a combination or a distillation we're really trying to create here. Read, learn Gemara, learn Machshava, learn Tanakh. There are so many great, great, powerful ideas, but don't let it erode or strip away the basic core ability to just have emunah pshuta and say Baruch Hashem and Nur Zagel Chaim and to be able to have that Hashadah Yiddish. Okay? Tomorrow we'll learn some Chassidus and Mitzvah Hashem.